Hi, 大家好 ，Welcome to episode 183 of the Mandarin Blueprint podcast。那今天呢，我们有很多很多评论，就是Gavia 给我们发的邮件。Gavia, one of our long-time members, has given us a series of emails today, or recently, that I'd like to read out for you because I think they'll be very, very useful. So she got in touch because she's been giving a lot of feedback over the last year or so, really, about her performance and her experience.Learning Chinese, acquiring Chinese the MB way, right? So I'd like to just jump straight into it, if you don't mind, because I don't really have many other updates for you. So here it is. Hi, Luke and Phil. I must be very close to my 2-year mark with Mandarin Blueprint, and I want to write you a proper report to tell you how I'm doing. But I'm way too busy at work to do it now. However, I still want to say thank you for these 2 years. Right now, I'm especially gladI got the habit building course, a habit building boot camp. My Chinese habit was quite strong from the beginning, and I think I would be studying every day even without the habit course. But with my professional life as crazy as it is right now, I'm sure that without the habit building course, I would feel that I'm not advancing or doing the right things. Thanks to the habit course, I now know that even if Chinese is sort of on a back burner in my life for a few weeks, I'm not losing my focus. A few more characters, a few moments of immersion,Anki or flashcards every day, whether I feel like doing it or not, I do it. It just happens. Even if I feel like I'm not studying nearly as much as I would like to, I'm not feeling lost. So why is the habit building course helping so much? Well, there's a bunch of tips that we give on how to build and maintain a Chinese habit. But I think the most important thing that we teach in that entire course, which I'll just share with you now, isSomething I learned from a book called Atomic Habits by James Clear, and it was the concept of changing your identity. And so basically, you don't see yourself as just someone who's dabbling in Chinese or trying to learn Chinese. It reminds me of that Matrix scene, you know, where Morpheus is training Neo and he's like, stop trying to hit me and hit me. So stop trying to learn Chinese, just learn it, just acquire it, right?And you do that by becoming a Chinese acquirer, a Chinese enthusiast, a Chinese fanatic. That's my favorite one. So you see yourself as that identity, or rather, that's the identity that you're trying to create, okay, and work towards. Now, the cool bit about this is that every time you do anything towards Chinese, or you make your environment more Chinese, you put Chinese posters, Chinese books, your apps, your first page of your phone is Chinese. Like they remind you, they give you cues to get started. They're also reminding youyou that you are that identity. It's like you're casting a vote for that identity every time you do that. Every time you do anything, every time you show up, if you spend 30 seconds, even if you just open up the Mandarin Blueprint method and do one lesson, you are casting a vote. Say, I am a Chinese fanatic or enthusiast, or at least an acquirer, right? That's what I am. And after you do that for a while, doesn't that take even that long, right? It takes maybe a few weeks to get to this point. But eventually, and a lot of you who have built up strong habits doing other things like exercise or whatever it is you do in your daily life, like habits that are mainly sort of, I think exercise is the best example, right? Someone like Phil, for example, who's just like exercises, goes to the gym every single day without fail, right? I don't do that, right? But because he sees himself as an athlete now, he is an athlete. So if he doesn't go to the gym for 1 or 2 days because he's on holiday or something, he feels weird. He feels odd, he feels off. And you know why? It's because his behavior is not conforming with his identity, and that's huge. So if you change your identity or work towards that new identity, that is like the core of your habits. That's better, that's more powerful than just saying, I want to learn Chinese, or I want to start learning Chinese every day, like a process. From your identity, that's where it comes from. And the deeper aspect of this, which I'm working on right now, is like, yeah, the identity part was kind of mind-blowing for me when I learned about it. And I realized that, yeah, I feel weird now not immersing in Chinese at least 30 minutes a day actively. Like, if I don't do that, in fact, I haven't not done that in 275 days or something like that. I've got my habit tracker here. But if I don't do it, well, there's just no way I'm not going to do it because it gets to the end of the day, I haven't done it. I feel like, I haven't done it. I need to do it, right? So that's huge. But one thing that can help towards this, which is not in the Atomic Habits book, is something that I just sort of thought of myself recently, I was inspired by another presentation I saw. It was actually like a marketing presentation. It wasn't anything to do with Chinese or language learning or habit building, really. But it just inspired me. So the thing that underlies your identity, so identity is the core of everything, right? But the thing that underlies your identity is the why, I feel, right? I feel that why are you learning Chinese? That doesn't necessarily create your identity, but it sort of causes it to come into being. It sort of gives it a foundation to rest upon, as it were. So find your why. Why are you learning Chinese? And here, this is where it gets more interesting. So there are a ton of reasons why you want to learn Chinese or acquire Chinese to a high level of fluency and understand Chinese and be able to communicate with Chinese people, right? There's a ton of reasons, like become more attractive to the opposite sex is like quite a shallow reason, but it's just a fact, right? You become generally a more interesting person as well. Your status is hugely upgraded, by a lot. And, your career prospects increase, obviously, you know, just massively. And you have the chance to make a lot more money, not just in your career, but if you're an entrepreneur or whatever, you have so many more opportunities to make money in your life. So these are all great reasons, right? As well as just generally being more confident. It also more confident to learn other things. Also just it makes your brain healthier, right? You're less chance of getting Alzheimer's, apparently. You know, you're just a more active brain. Is very good for you. So there's tons of benefits towards health, career, just financial, everything, right? And go ahead and choose a few of those. Maybe you have a different, just makes you more disciplined. It affects other habits in your life, makes you more, just eat better maybe, or sleep better because you want to learn Chinese, right? So it's almost like a keystone habit, or it affects keystone habits as well. So there's all these reasons. But the interesting thing that I realized was like all these reasons are underpinned by a desire to contribute to the world and the people that you love in your life. I know that sounds kind of crazy at first, but if you think about it, I don't personally think most of us are like selfish people. I think that we want to make more money, we want more status, and we want to attract, you know, a mate, and we want to have a great family, but we want to do that, all that stuff, not for us necessarily, like at least not at first, sorry, at least not ultimately in the end. In the end, what it is, yeah, I want to attract, someone, or I want to make more money. But the idea is that you want, why? Why do you want to do that? So you can sort of go deeper and deeper. And the real reason you want to do any of that stuff is because you want to have more status and stuff like that. But then you go even deeper. Why do you want to have more status? Well, I mean, you don't. What you want is to contribute to the world. So I want to learn Chinese and I want to keep improving my Chinese because I want to be better at what I do, and I want to inspire people, and I want to think of better ways to help people do the same, right? So that's me specifically, and not everyone listening to this. In fact, probably precisely zero people actually have a Chinese sort of a business based around teaching people Chinese. But the point is, you find your own why, and then you link learning Chinese to that, and then you build your identity. Then you start saying, okay, so this is why I'm doing this. I want to support my family. I want to achieve my personal dreams. I want to, you know, yeah, have financial freedom, all that sort of stuff. But it's like, well, I want to enjoy. I want to wake up and enjoy every day. I want to have better experiences, and I want to provide a better life for other people. And I want to improve the world in some way. I want to leave kind of a legacy, and we all kind of do, right? So anyway, that might be getting too deep for some of you. I didn't probably expect that, but. Have a try, just have a think about it today, and think about your why, and think about the identity you're trying to create, and stop being a dabbler, basically. If you want to learn this language, stop being a dabbler and see yourself as a Chinese fanatic and start casting votes for that identity. Anyway, continuing. One question, what to do about words that come out backwards, quote unquote, all of a sudden? I speak for a good half hour every week with my language partner. Speaking is not my main focus, but I'm starting to activate what I've learned, and it's fun. I notice lately that I often know that I know a word, or I don't even know that I know, but it just comes up. Okay, yeah, I know what you mean. But then I don't quite remember or know it and end up saying the characters in the wrong order. It happens frequently now, and it did before. Today I say 妆化 instead of 化妆, like put on makeup. I only notice these myself when my language partner tells me he doesn't understand what I mean, although by now he's getting so used to it that he understands by guessing that I'm turning things around and again and just bursts out laughing. Any tips? I guess more immersion. Sorry, because my usual answer is more immersion. Sorry. Maybe I just need a more solid base for my words in general. I'm doing individual characters on a faster track now than sentences to learn words, and or I'm trying to activate these words a bit too early and need more input and less speaking. Maybe this didn't happen before because I was using a much more limited vocabulary, and now I'm starting to relax and tap into that unconsciously learned part of my vocabulary. Isn't that cool? Trying to think something positive in order to not get frustrated here. Yeah, and that's why Gabby is so successful with this language and why she's doing so well despite being so busy, because she is kind of hard on herself, which is a good thing in one way. I'm very hard on myself, but it is kind of, it can go overboard sometimes, right? So it's really tough to manage that, but we've got to try. On the other hand, searching for a word like that must mean that I'm still translating my mind, right? Translating my thoughts. Today I was, but sometimes it seemed like those switch order words come out unconsciously, automatically. But if they really did, they'd come out right, wouldn't they? Not in a switched character order. So I need more immersion and probably a bit more sleep too. No matter how strong my habits are, I do notice the lack of sleep and general tiredness in how things are going. So any tips on how to keep my characters in order in words? Take care. Yes, of course. So I don't know exactly what the issue is there, but it's most likely related to sleep. Just saying things wrong. Like if you're really tired or hungover or whatever it is, and you try and speak your native language, you're going to have more trouble. Okay. So that is of course a factor. And yeah, you probably do need more immersion. After a long, long time of immersion, you won't make these sorts of mistakes. But if these mistakes are repeatedly coming up, like more than once, then the best way to deal with this is to just focus, right? So what's the word? Huadrong. So this is what I sent to Gabby. It's just an example I picked out of the air. I didn't remember what I said, actually. I'll try and think of another example now. But you're basically making a mnemonic for that word. Maybe you've made one before to learn it first, but you make a mnemonic that specifically calls out and calls attention to the order of the characters. So it's Huadrong, all right? So so it's Huadrong. So I know Hua is not, it's not like the painting or drawing Hua in Chinese, like it says, it's like Hua as in transform, right? Which is another way, like it's another, but I like the idea of, that's why I love Chinese, making Chinese word mnemonics, because there's so many homophones, you can use that to your advantage. So Hua means like a ton of different things in Chinese, right? Depending on what the character is. But I would just use, because I would just imagine, it could be myself. It could be myself doing makeup on myself, or just a random woman doing makeup. And Zhuang is like, also Zhuang is like, for me, it's like the actual, where you form the shape of something. Like Zhuang Xiu, like where you renovate an apartment or something like that. You like sort of do the finishing touches on it. So once the house is built, you Zhuang Xiu. So Hua Zhuang. So you make, how do you make sure that you do the transform and draw Hua, and then the Zhuang, the actual makeup part or the actual decoration, as it were, later. Well, I think of it as the order of actually doing makeup. Now, I don't know much about doing makeup, but I imagine that you do the foundation-y part first, and then you do all like the eye makeup and stuff afterwards. So first you like do like a, you draw sort of the outline, as it were. So you do the foundation, you get the basics done, so hua. And then you sort of do the Zhuang part afterwards, where you sort of perfect it and you get like the mascara and the eyeliner and the lipstick and all that stuff afterwards. Now, I may be wrong, but that's my understanding of how makeup is put on. So that's what I would do. And I would just take a few seconds. Maybe it takes 30 seconds. Maybe it takes 10 seconds. Maybe it takes a minute. But you just focus on that word and then there you go. And it should help fix that problem. So just do that with every word that repeatedly you make a mistake with. Because I've done it too. I think it's a common problem. And that's what I would recommend to anyone else having that issue as well. Okay. So then we had another email from Gavia. I believe it was like the same day or a day or two later. I can't remember. But she just gave us a quick update here. So she said, "Hi, Luke and Phil. I don't remember the exact date, but I must have signed up for the MB pronunciation course somewhere towards the end of June 2020. So it's time to look back and see how far I've come in 2 years. What can I do with my Chinese now? What do I even want to do with it to begin with? I'm currently on level 63, character 1767. That's out of 3,050. So she's almost there, of the upper intermediate course. And I have reviewed sentences up to level 51. All of them? Wow, that's impressive, because we have a lot of sentences and we don't make it required that you actually review all of them, but you absolutely can. It will be incredibly helpful if you do so. But some people are in a rush to get to the end, understandably, so they do want to skip a lot of the sentences and then go back later. Right now, I plan to work on a pace of minimum one, average 3 characters per day, add new sentences only very slowly, and use the rest of the time for immersion and output practice. That means that I should be finishing the advanced course characters sometime in the fall of 2023, and will still have sentences for a long time to come, mixing them with immersion material and sentence mining little by little. My initial motivation to learn comes from a morning moment 25 years ago in Beijing Park after practicing Tai Chi together with locals. All of them wanted to talk with us, but we had no language in common, so I absolutely wanted to learn Chinese. But life happened and I forgot my Chinese dream until 22 years later when I started considering another trip to Beijing in 2019, and I remember my long-forgotten dream of learning the language. So you could say that my first and foremost goal is to be able to communicate better if I ever get a chance to travel to China again. That's why I want to focus on spoken conversational language, and I obviously want to be able to understand and speak. Also, I already have 2 silent languages that I only read in, but I'm not comfortable speaking due to lack of practice, and I don't want that to happen with Chinese. Absolutely. That's why I insist on listening and speaking. There are other dreams like being able to read real literature and enjoy movies and series in Chinese, learn some classical Chinese at some point, and reading traditional texts on Chinese philosophy, learning about traditional Chinese culture and history in Chinese, understanding a Chinese explanation of Qigong technique, although this is not very essential as I have a fantastic teacher in Europe that speaks fluent English. Just connecting and communicating with Chinese people, understanding how the world looks from their point of view. I'm not learning Chinese to do business, but if Chinese tourists ever return to our part of the world, maybe doing business with some of them might be an opportunity to practice Chinese just for the sake of learning more. That elusive fluency that no one knows how to define. That's great. It's like an in joke among us language teachers. Are these realistic dreams for a 50-year-old who is overwhelmed with work and too busy to really study anything? Do they make sense? No, not really, but I don't care. I think they make sense. Just study on, following the MB course character by character and enjoying the journey. At this point, I have come too far to quit anyway, and to be honest, I don't even care if I can't ever go back to China. I would still continue learning, even if I don't really know why. Well, just a quick update there, like China is opening back up again. So it's not going to be so crazy for a while. China went like hardcore lockdowns and stuff recently, but I think it's coming out of it. You know, pretty much most of the world, I believe, or at least definitely my home country, is completely sort of not doing any sort of COVID-y stuff now, which is great. And I think because I don't want to comment on the Chinese government, of course, because that just gets us in trouble. But essentially, you know, I think that they basically made an announcement, we're going to go like zero COVID policy, and then the whole rest of the world kind of went, okay, we're not doing that anymore. And then they were like, well, we have to kind of still do it, right? Because we said we were going to do it. So how am I doing with these dreams after 2 years on the MB course? Let's see. I can type Chinese now. I can start a written chat anytime with people I have met on HelloTalk or someone new. I can easily tell them my story, where I'm from, where I live, what I study, what I do for a living, my hobbies, interests, why I study Chinese, and I can ask them about their story. Of course, I'm missing many words, but it doesn't matter. I can just throw in a word or two of English, only occasionally, and say, 用中文怎么说? How do you say this in Chinese? And they will tell me. Next time I'll know. And if I then review that is, which they correct me, the messages still come back with sometimes a lot of red, that is mistakes in them, but that's okay. Yeah, I mean, the main goal is to be understood. You don't need to be perfect. There's tons of people that are fluent in English, but just, I mean, you can tell there's so many mistakes. Every single sentence has mistakes in it, but you understand what they're saying. And maybe they even have like a very bad accent or something like that. But as long as you understand what they're saying, you forget about all that. And as long as you're working on improving it gradually, you know, in your own time, it's just an ego thing at the end of the day, right? As long as your communication is successfully getting to them. And I'm talking to myself mainly here, because again, I'm very hard on myself and I'm like, oh, I made a mistake there, and I'll think about it for hours. But no one cares, literally. As long as you said what you needed to say and you got your thoughts into their brain. But I'm like that. What's important to me is that picking up the phone and starting typing Chinese feels completely natural to me now. Wow. Even easy. There's nothing hard about it. It's just as normal as switching the keyboard between my native Finnish to English or Spanish to write those languages. No, my Chinese level is nowhere near my strong languages, but typing Chinese almost daily, even if it's just a little bit, feels just as normal to me. I can also read most of what they answer. I need to look up characters and words, of course, but mostly I get the point of what they are saying, even before I go run it through Google Translate, just in case, to know what they are saying. I have been asked a few times where I used to live in China because you sound so Chinese. Awesome. I love that. They generally don't expect someone in a totally non-Chinese environment can write like that after only 2 years of study. And by the way, just to pause here, I'm sure some of you are wondering, how long has Gavia spent each day on Chinese? Because I actually asked her, that was the first, after I received this wonderful email, that was the first thing I asked her. And we'll get to that in a minute. So just keep in mind, she studied for 2 years, okay? And think about all the results that she's got. And then I'll reveal later, and very shortly, exactly how much time she spent each day on this language. That said, my level is not very high. I only write very simple things, of course, but I feel that it is a very good start, a solid base. I have been writing on HelloTalk for about a year and a half already. I could start early since I had studied some characters. Nothing else, just characters for some time before I started MB. During that early morning moment in Ritan Park, in Beijing about 25 years ago, I really wished I could speak Chinese. If someone took me to Ritan Park, Taizi Corner tomorrow morning, I could easily have that conversation in Chinese now if it was through typing on a phone. Speaking is still another matter. I can't read real books. 1,700 characters doesn't quite make it yet. As I'm tired of graded material, I have not been reading much of anything for a long time. I can't read subtitles either, mostly because my reading speed is too slow, even if the characters happen to be familiar and understandable. That comes with time. And also it comes when your listening improves. So your listening as it improves because of input and immersion. Of course, your characters need to get to at least 3,000 as well. But your listening will push your understanding of the reading of the subtitles faster, right? And then vice versa, right? Your listening will be supported by what you're reading at the same time, okay? So that will come. So just like every stage of learning this language, you know, when you first learn characters, when you first learn words, when you first read sentences, when you first listen to a sentence, when you know, it's always a challenge at first, but then it becomes easy. Now with less sentences on Anki, I feel that my characters really need some company. They need to make friends with other characters. I want to see them out in the wild and I feel the need to read. So I have just ordered some transcripts from my favorite podcast to start reading something that is conversational, everyday spoken language, and not too difficult. Reading will be one of my focus areas for my third MB year. Seeing a paragraph of characters anywhere else than a HelloTalk message that I expect to understand still feels like the Great Wall of China. My brain still switches off to can't get that anyway mode. That's something I would like to change in next year. I would climb over that wall soon. I can speak comfortably on the phone with one Chinese person. That's my language partner, who calls me every Sunday night, and we're on the phone for 45 minutes to an hour. Topics go from how was your week to talking about the weather or food to cultural differences, COVID situation, travel, language, learning, literature, movies, series, and world politics. How is it possible when I otherwise feel I really can't speak? Well, we have been speaking like this for a year. First calls were very short. Every sentence was very slow and needed to be repeated 3 times and possibly still translated before it was understandable. But we know each other by now. There is often enough context to guess what the other person is possibly saying. And we know each other's level. His Spanish is on a quite similar level as my Chinese. We are both serious and experienced language learners. Our conversations are very relaxed, just to practice and have fun. Not so much about systematically studying, really. That phone call is always the highlight of my Chinese week, a prize I get for whatever I've been doing to study and improve. And I highly recommend, even if you're a lower level, don't force yourself to do this, but I highly recommend you think about doing this, starting to call someone on the phone. Or just start by texting and writing, and then gradually, as you get braver, pick up the phone and have a chat. Might have to do it with a few people until you find someone like this like Gavia found this person that she likes. That they have basically good. You could call it language practice chemistry if you want. And you find I believe there's a name for it. I can't remember what it is. It's like a language. let's just call it a language partner for now. There's another word for it, but you find someone that you feel comfortable talking with. And that might take a few people, might take 10 people before you find someone, depending on how neurotic you are. But you find someone that you feel comfortable with, and then you regularly have contact with that person, right? And it's free most of the time. I mean, if you want, you could pay someone to do it if you want. That takes away a lot of the discomfort when you're paying someone, I'll be honest with you. But if you don't want to, you don't have to. And just do that. We had recently Chad Ressler, one of our OGs, right, we call him, because he's with us since we first released in January 2019. And he's taking it really slow through the course, taking his time with it. But he's just recently started having lessons with tutors. And he told me on Facebook, he's just like, it's awesome. You know, it's just, I'm like, yeah, well, when you start having real meaningful communication with native speakers, that's where the magic happens, right? In fact, I say that for acquisition. Acquisition is where the magic happens through immersion. But there's a different kind of magic when it comes to actually communicating in real time with a real person and being understood and understanding them. So it's very cool. So I recommend you at least dabble in it, right? As you know, you just like one tutoring session or whatever, one chat a week, and then gradually increase. Even if you're a lower level, just try out. I'd recommend you finish the foundation course first, level 36 at least, before you start doing that. But it's definitely something to try. So I've tried speaking with other people on the phone, but I don't have much time and it feels too daunting to start establishing a dynamic that would work for both with a new person. My biggest problem is in speaking is still understanding what they say. Yeah, listening is pretty much that takes the longest to develop of all the four skills, you know, writing, speaking, listening, reading, because it just takes time. There's no hack for it really. There are kind of hacks again, right, reading will help your listening. That's why we say like start off by watching TV with subtitles, and start off with, you know, children's television, or reading while listening to something. But essentially you just need to take the training wheels off at some point and just purely listen to something that's roughly your level and just keep listening until you understand it. And you will understand it after a few hours of doing that. It might take 50 hours of listening before you really start to see an improvement. But you will inevitably, it's like a law of nature, you will naturally be able to pass the sounds. My biggest problem in speaking is still understanding what they say. I mostly don't or only guess unless it's very predictable and slow. I have tried, but I just get frustrated and quit or switch to English very soon with anyone else for now. I can open my mouth in Chinese, but I can't say it feels natural or easy at all, except on Sunday nights on the phone with my language partner. That's one out of 1.4 billion Chinese people, but it's a start, right? Yes, it is. I haven't really spoken Chinese face-to-face at all with anyone. If I try, it's more like I say something which they mostly understand or guess from context. If I have first prepared them saying something in English, like, I'm going to try to speak Chinese now, so listen carefully, please. And then I will smile and nod while they talk to me and think that I'm understanding something. Often I am, but not understanding clearly enough makes me too nervous to respond to anything. So there's no conversation really. And that's absolutely fine. You're not ready. Yeah, if you're not ready, you're not ready. That's fine. I think a lot of it is, again, your own thinking of it and again, speaking from experience, right? But I think a lot of it is in your head, literally. I think you're just but that's fine. If you're not ready, then you're not ready. Just go back home and sharpen the saw, right? Keep listening, keep reading. Listen as much as you possibly can. That's the key to comprehension and communication like a native, like accurately. So just keep it up and it will come. I have been told my pronunciation is much better than an average foreigner's pronunciation and that I'm understandable, but also that my tones are still way off and it's sometimes hard to follow what I'm trying to say. That's fine. Takes a bit of focus, okay? And that's what when you start hitting the practice with a tutor a bit more, when you start doing that, that's where that's going to come in handy, because you'll be able to get more feedback specifically on where your tones are wrong and how to improve them. And listening to a recording of yourself is also a good way of doing that. All right. I can listen to one native podcast easily and understanding enough to keep my brain engaged in it, even if I don't understand everything. I get most out of what is going on. And if I listen carefully in 10-minute sprints, repeating each sprint three times back to back, I end up understanding practically everything about the message, even if I may miss words. I've been wondering whether this is true or if I just think I understand, but I just got a transcript of one of my favorite episodes and I'm reading it through systematically. It seems that I really did understand maybe 95% or more of the message through listening. Listening to other native material doesn't work well at all yet, The reason I can follow this one is that I'm used to their accent and way of speaking. Do you know what? Like, that is a bit, it's a problem, right? Because one of the challenges is of Mandarin is that people do have all kinds of different accents from all different areas. And that is one thing that takes an extra while to get used to. So you can get used to, for example, 普通话, like standard Mandarin, but when people throw different accents at you, it can be very tough. I'm sure it is for people learning English too. I mean, there's so many different accents in English, right? The reason I can follow this one is that I'm used to the accent, the way of speaking, and they use simple conversational everyday language. And I think it also makes the difference that they have clearly had a lot of contact with Western culture and are fluent English speakers with many international friends and listeners. It's not a podcast specifically made for language learners. It's not graded material, but it works wonderfully for me. That said, getting here has taken me about 6 months of listening to it weekly, and I started at understanding only some words and parts of sentences. It helps a lot to have the topic of the episode in English and maybe run the description through translation software first to know what they're talking about before starting. I don't need to do that anymore. I just understand and it feels so cool. The podcast is 打个电话给你, one call away. It's mentioned as level 4 immersion material in the MBA immersion course, so I'm the rebel there, skipping ahead several levels above my real level, but really there are not that many characters that are included in the intermediate course. It's just fast. By the way, the girls are originally from Shenzhen, if it is listed as Taiwanese podcast in the immersion course. In the episode where they discuss accents, one of them mentions that many Chinese people also think that she sounds Taiwanese. The other native language is in fact Cantonese. Most of my Hello Talk friends also told me it's obvious that they are Taiwanese, but they aren't. Which on the other hand also means that the transcripts are in simplified characters, which is great. My next goal is to get to a similar level, that is, I can understand what's going on. My brain won't switch off because of frustration. I can stay engaged with a Beijing accent podcast, 日谈公园. It's similar in the sense that it's conversational, chat between friends kind of thing, but probably with much wider topics and sometimes very strong Beijing accent. Yeah, it's tough. At the moment, it feels mostly like one call away felt in the beginning. But now I have gone through the process of getting to a decent level of understanding with one podcast, it's easy to believe that it can happen again. And since my Chinese studies somehow got the first spark of interest precisely at 日谈公园, like the real place, this just sounds right to me. It's like fate, isn't it? China's not yet arrived into my physical real world. It's all on the internet with the MB course, Hello Talk series. My only real world Chinese friend is my Tai Chi teacher, who's not at all interested in helping me learn Chinese, but he's my challenge, the one whom I can trust to give me the most brutal feedback in a very old school Chinese, super strict and demanding teacher kind of way. His opinion now has now changed from, you do know you will never learn, right? To, I admit that if you now went to live in Beijing for a while, you would probably speak pretty fluently after living there for a year or so. Well done. You got the approval from a 糟老头, a rather harsh Chinese dude. I don't speak Chinese with him, but any WhatsApp conversation is all in Chinese. I even felt that I may have heard a little bit of something maybe resembling something like pride in his voice when I was trying to participate in a conversation in Chinese with him and a Chinese restaurant owner said, and he told them, 他写的比他说的好多了. All right, nice. She writes a lot better than she speaks. He lives far away anyway, and there are no Chinese people here that I would like to talk to. If and when Chinese tourists return, I guess I will get one of those Mandarin Companion t-shirts that say, 跟我说中文. I've never heard of that, but that sounds really cool. And just walk around town on weekends wearing it and see what happens. That's fantastic. In normal times, we do get a lot of tourists here. A new client of ours, a Vietnamese-born American who is a longtime resident of Shanghai, recently mentioned she may be able to recommend our business to some of her Asian friends. For the time being, I could tell her that I speak just enough Chinese to make a Chinese person smile and make them feel welcome, even if it's not fluent enough to really communicate for business. Yet. I added the yet. Anyway, just after 2 years and after lots of fun studying, this is more than good enough for me. And I'm really looking forward to whatever new skills I'll reach during my next Mandarin Blueprint year. Thank you, Luke and Phil. I'm a big thank you also to Christine. Well done, Christine, for being my MB study buddy with whom I can share tips and tricks and the joys and frustrations with the journey. It's been so helpful. Kind regards, Gavia. So that's a fantastic email, isn't it? I mean, I've given lots of feedback on it already, so I won't go on about it. But one thing I did respond to, I said, how long did it take you each day on average? You know, what did you do each day for 2 years? She said, I really don't know how much time I spend because none of it feels like studying. Isn't that great? You know my situation, 50 to 60 hours, work weeks, an elderly parent at home to take care of nights and weekends. Time is limited. Flashcard reviews for 40 to 75 minutes per day. That's all for the characters and the sentences. That's done in 5-10 minute intervals all through the day, little by little. Maybe an hour of relatively concentrated immersion, character study, pronunciation practice, writing, a bit of passive immersion, not necessarily every day. So here and there, basically, in the background, sort of not really focused study. Many weekends end up being total Chinese marathons for hours, but other weekends I hardly find the time to review flashcards. On average, I do much more on weekends than weekdays. Never have a zero day. Why take time off from something that's fun and relaxing? That's now. The first year, it was maybe not as consistent, less study and watching lots of series, too difficult material to count as immersion really, but that helped get used to the sound of the language. I'll see if I can find that Chinese text for you just to make myself review and correct it again. I would probably benefit from a bit more systematic approach to many things, but I don't seem to be able to help myself. Always moving on to the next interesting thing. Now it's listening. At some point it was writing, then pronunciation or speaking, then characters again. I can't do everything all the time, but these sprints in different areas seem to work for me. I can't plan then, though. My interest just shifts from one thing to another. But as long as it's fun and it works, who cares? Take care, Gavia. So isn't that just great? So Gavia is an interesting case because she's generally exhausted most of the time because she works so hard, 50, 60 hour work weeks, plus caring for an elderly relative. So therefore that's going to decrease the effectiveness of her study time, like inevitably. But essentially, she's enjoying the journey. That's number one, right? She's enjoying it. It doesn't even feel like work or study. It's just having fun for her, right? So that's a key thing. And Gavia does tend to go off the beaten track, right? She just does her own thing because she's such an experienced language learner. And she wants to focus on what she enjoys more, especially in the first year, as she mentioned, before we really started talking with each other. So before, like, she was doing her own thing, she was listening to far too advanced material, which is, at that level, it's kind of a waste of time. So there's a lot of wasted time there at the beginning. But at the end of the day, it's not wasted time if she is having fun, right? But I'm just talking about in terms of getting efficient results, right? Getting more effective fluency. So I would say, so she's done 40 minutes, 45, 50 minutes a day on her flashcards, little by little throughout the day, a little bit of immersion, and then a bit more on the weekend. So we're talking an hour or two a day, possibly closer to 1 hour a day by the sounds of it. On average, probably an hour and a half, between an hour and a half and 2 hours a day in total, including all the immersion time as well. And she's managed to get to a point where she's basically conversational in Chinese and she's literate in Chinese in 2 years. And she's just doing wonderful things. And I'm really impressed. And well done, Gavia. And I need to have a drink because I've just been speaking for ages. So that's awesome. I'm so happy to hear that. So next here is Annette by email. And she says, "Hi, Luke and Phil. I enjoyed the full-length interview with Kaiser Kuo, Legends of Language Learning. That's our new free course, which you should be able to find a link somewhere on this podcast. If it's on YouTube, should be a link in the description. I'd briefly come across SUP China a long time ago, but it wasn't a direct language learning site and I dismissed it. Now that I know better what I can learn from it, it is indeed a very interesting site and I've started to listen to some of the podcasts while working out. I found the first half of this one really interesting. It's called Why Typing Characters is Better Than Handwriting. It makes me not feel too bad if my character writing is not 100%. Yeah, it's like the least important part of your Chinese skill set. In response to studying my flashcards, if I type, I know for sure if it is the right character or word I'm looking at. I have long thought that typing pinyin helps me in an auditory way to help to remember the word, and it seems to be confirmed. Ultimately, What works depends on one's optimal learning style, preferences and interests, e.g. calligraphy. I actually add the pinyin of the radicals we learn to the flashcard because it helps me remember the prop. As weird as it may sound to some people, I need characters, props, to have the sounds, and I believe so far that I've come across two that have no sound and are harder for me to remember. One for sure is not an official radical, which of course explains why there is no sound. Anyway, I just thought I would point out this first half of the podcast, given that you encourage some handwriting when going through the flashcards. Yep. So the handwriting we encourage is more about getting, it's helping you memorize, get some muscle memory, because we don't want you to not have any handwriting skill whatsoever. It's the least important of your whole skill set, like listening, reading, and obviously even like writing, of course, is important, but within writing, it's the least important thing, right? So actually being able to write a note in Chinese by hand, it's nice to be able to do, and you will need to write Chinese occasionally, but it's like the least likely thing that you'll need to do, okay? The reason why we encourage handwriting just one time as you learn the character or review the character once, maybe twice if you want, but it's just to get the muscle memory, and there's something about this connection between the hand and the mind. We don't know what it is. I don't know. I don't understand it, but there just is. Like it's nice to have the stroke order as well. So if you ever do need to write a character for whatever reason, it would actually be legible, okay? I would happily say that's not mandatory in the course. It's just something that I think is very, very close to mandatory, okay? Just because it helps so much in other areas. My progress is much slower now in the intermediate course. I found a new rhythm that works, which makes me not bother with images for the sentences that combine a new character with others into words. I do, however, like to unsuspend all the sentences to read the same word used in different ways. That's a very good idea. I look at it as additional graded reading material. Yeah, and so you should, for sure. I find that I no longer need the images with most two-character words. Only in a few instances will I do this. So basically, if you're not familiar with how we do it, it's like we encourage you to do it just basically when you're learning a new compound word in Chinese, the flashcard for that word or that word within a sentence, for example, you don't have a specific vocabulary flashcard, we encourage you to choose an image that relates to a living link, a personal connection to that word, right, and put it in the sentence. But you don't have to do that. It's just something to enhance the experience, make it more memorable, and get it into your long-term memory faster. I also spend much more time on immersion, which in an almost bi-weekly increment increases in enjoyment. Wow. As I learn new characters and words, some from the shows I watch that I add to the flashcards, especially the vocab boost spread throughout each intermediate level, are a boon to understanding more. That's so great to hear. I'm so glad you're having a great experience with immersion. I just learned Wei, what a grand character for a word meaning just the opposite. Yeah, sorry, and if you're just listening to this, Wei, like as in Shao Wei, like it means a tiny or a little bit. And it's a very complicated character. It's got tons of components in it. I think it's like, well, on the Mandarin Blueprint method even, it's got 1, 2, 3, 4, at least 4, maybe 5 components. So it's one of those outliers. It's quite busy characters to learn. The dictionary says the traditional character is the same. Guess that is why it is as complex as it is, which triggered a ridiculous, almost high noon standoff type story between Worf, Star Trek, and the Terminator. He's the left side component. And the tap dancer as part of the prop ensemble. Still having a lot of fun. Do you know what? I actually remember learning that character. I took about 5 or 10 minutes constructing this really elaborate scene with Woody from Toy Story outside my friend Will's house. And I remember it to this day because I spent so much time on it, because I was like, this is a complicated character. I'm going to make this memory palace. And in those 5 minutes, I learned it like the back of my hand, and it was well worth it, right? But it's only 5 minutes, I memorized it forever. Still having a lot of fun with learning Chinese and not hit the intermediate level blues yet. Well, if you do, get in touch. Thank you very much, Annette. Rita, by email, just send a nice little email. She says, Dear Luke and Phil, wow, again to your communication. So well thought, light, entertaining, and educational. Good for you guys. I loved your example about Bruce Lee's Jeet Kune Do method, which I'd never heard of, not a fan of martial arts. And your summary of economy of motion, efficiency, directness, and simplicity. So useful. So basically, there was a newsletter recently I put out, which was comparing the Mandarin Blueprint method with Bruce Lee's creation of Jeet Kune Do. It's very cool. I was very happy with it. I've been a fan of Bruce Lee a long time, or at least I was. I'm not so much now, but I was, you know, in my teen years. It's a good read. Go and check your inbox, or just send us a request and we'll send it to you if you've joined us late, and I'll happily send you that email. Congratulations for having done such great work using the best of good methods around. It's been a long journey, a lot of work, well worth it. Thank you so much, Rita. Thanks for all the references from our other course from other courses and the tips for what doesn't work. And thanks also for your innovations. The main one is the pronunciation mastery course. Thanks again for your communication. Congratulations again. You have succeeded in making your unique course as close to perfect as possible. The next best would be to be born to Chinese parents and learn from them. My appreciation and warm regards to you and your beautiful families, Rita. Thank you so much, Rita. That's awesome. Just lovely to read that. Really appreciate it. I hope you're doing well too. Keanu, not Keanu, right? I'm a big fan of Keanu, and his comments are awesome. So, golly, he says these like American little phrases that crack me up. Golly, this was difficult to get through. I read it yesterday and then again today. Much easier the second time or day going through it. Pumped to come back to it in a few weeks and smash it. You, which I imagine I'm supposed to be screaming, like shouting that loudly like a Texan, right, or whatever it is, whoever says that. I had a friend that was from Texas and he said he screamed that a lot when he was drunk. But I imagine it's you. I'm not going to do it, but I appreciate the sentiment. That's brilliant. It just goes to show you, you know, it takes a bit of persistence. Like you heard with Gavi's comment as well, right? It's like you have to keep showing up. You have to keep consistent. It's always going to be difficult at first, but then you just keep doing it. And after, it could take 5 times, could take 20 times, could take 100 times. But if you listen to the same sentences, you will get better every single time at understanding it incrementally. Okay. Matt Schubert, finally, on Vocab Unlocked from Zhao, which means to beckon. I was waiting for Danmen to pop up somewhere in the course. In my immersion practice so far with mainland TV shows, I noticed Danmen being used very often in casual dialogue. Is there any meaningful semantic difference between that and Wormen? Is it a regional thing, formality, generational? Would it make me sound more like a native to use it? Just curious. Yeah, this is a really common question, actually. We've been asked this a few times, and it's a great question. Danmen and Wormen. I remember, I'll give you an example. Right, so Danmen basically includes myself and this. So I'm speaking, right? So I'm including myself and you, and that's it. Right? And now it could be multiple people that I'm talking to a group of people. But the key thing is, the thing that not many people know about this, is that it's one thing you learn just through pure experience, right, and just listening to a lot of Chinese, is that Danmen is used with people that you are relatively close with. All right, so it's a way of, or you want to sound like you're closer to someone. So for example, you might have a boss or a manager talk to his team and he'll say Danmen, and he'll say that instead of Wormen to feel closer, to make everyone sort of 团结起来, you know, feel like, oh yeah, we're part of a team, we're together, we're in this together, you know. But I heard it stuck out a lot for me when I went to my father-in-law's funeral, and I, you know, everyone said Dan Baba, Dan Baba, Danmen Baba, you know, our father, you know. And I thought, you know, because they were saying like that, what they were doing by saying Danmen Baba, they were not just grammatically correct. What they were saying was, you are a part of this family as well. You know, he's your father too, even though we're, you know, thousands of miles apart and in opposite cultures. So it's a very meaningful word if used in that sense. But generally, yeah, it could just be Danmen. It doesn't have to be all this like, you know, tear-jerking, meaningful, emotional stuff. It literally just means also, hey, me and you, the person I'm talking to, or the small group of people I'm talking to. It wouldn't work in like a huge speech. Like if you had like a politician, it would be more like giving a speech to people. It wouldn't quite work, or I haven't seen it at least done that way. It would be more like a close quarters sort of usage. But what Wormen is also fine. But if you want to just include you and the speaker, then that's what you would do. But Wormen, you'd be like, you would say, if I'm talking to a Chinese person and I'm English, I would say, I wouldn't say 咱们英国人, right? I would say 我们英国人. I would say, because I'm talking about us English people, what we like to do is blah, blah, blah. because he's not English, right? So I would never say 咱们英国人 if the other person I'm talking to is not English, right? So I hope that's clear enough. And that brings us to the end of today's podcast. So I hope that was enjoyable for you. I certainly enjoyed it. And I can't wait to see you next month. Bye-bye.